So today we are contemplating spiritual rebirth, contemplating more and more how we shall become as our practice deepens more and more. And in some ways I think we should do spiritual rebirth before we do spiritual death. It would be kind of illogical, but it would make the spiritual death bit a lot easier. Because when you do spiritual death, particularly when you get into sort of non-self and the emptiness of inherent existence or things like that, it brings up nihilistic tendencies in people. And I got one or two little notes after yesterday from people who were saying it had sort of put them a bit in that place. So when you contemplate what happens and how things are on the other side of spiritual death, then it becomes clear that whatever happens with spiritual death is a real liberation. It's not just ending up in some black hole where nothing exists. But emotion, even though we probably know that, you know, intellectually, sort of emotionally, still we tend to go there. So I'm going to spend a few minutes kind of reverting to yesterday. And yeah, let's see. If nothing else, by the end of this retreat, when we contemplate things like no self, if we can at least have good reasons to know that those nihilistic tendencies that come up really don't have a leg to stand on. Yeah. They're just maras. That's really all they are. Yes, because you get questions like, well, if there's no self, how can there be any sort of self-preservation? Why don't I just, you know, why do I protect myself from fire and so on? Or if everything is emptiness, well, that just seems like nothingness. And so on. So to the extent that we feel that we experience a self as some kind of entity, we feel that no self means losing that. It feels like we're losing something important. So there are a few ways we could look at this and a few things that we could remind ourselves of. The first one is that there is no self now. So if there was a self, well, we've already lost it. Yeah. It isn't here. Yeah. And yet, somehow, despite there being no self, we seem to be managing to function quite well, and we don't all throw ourselves lemming-like, you know, sort of off Oyster Hill or anything. So it seems that if the Buddha's right and there are just the five skandhas, then they manage to function pretty well in terms of just looking after themselves anyway. Yeah. So the other side of insight, even if you see really clearly that there's no self, that just takes away a kind of tendency to hunker down around and worry about me. And when that's not there, the body is still here, the mind's still functioning, it's functioning much better, in fact, and there's far more metta than there was before. And that metta includes metta for this psychophysical organism just as much as for anything else. So, yeah, firstly, there is no self now. Yes, with seeing no self, we don't lose anything real. We just lose a painful, limiting delusion. We have nothing to lose but our chains. What Blake called mind-forged manacles. Oh dear, such a steerer. manacles. die Fesseln, glaube ich. Ein Schmidt fasst die Fesseln aus Eis. Fesseln brechen. Die zehn Fesseln.
Ja.
Ja. Aber hier der Geist fasst die Fesseln. Ja. Das ist die Meinung. Okay. So we have nothing to lose but our chains. There is no self now. There's just an idea. We have a wrong conception of how things are. But if it helps, rather than thinking in terms of no self, we can also think in terms of, Bhante suggested we can think in terms of there being a new self every moment. That's another way to look at it, if that helps. So it gives us more of a sort of positive sense. He's also said that if you were to be attached to absolutely everything, so that everything felt like mine, everything equally, then that would have the same effect as well. This is kind of where Marmaki, the mind maker, comes in. Yeah. So if we were either being not identified with anything or being absolutely identified with everything is where we want to be. What we don't want is the kind of division where we're connected, we feel connected to some of our experience, but not to all of it. And then we need to come back to the fact that we're talking about about selfing. Yeah. We're not talking about a self. We're talking about a limited, self-defeating way of functioning. Yeah. We're not talking about any real thing. If you think about it, selfing is based on the five kleshas. So if we're talking about giving up selfing, then we're talking about giving up craving and clinging, which feels like that might be quite good. Yeah, it might be nice not to do that. Giving up preening ourselves and feeling worthless. And that seems quite good too. Well, the odd little preen here and there might feel quite good, but generally, it's just not having to worry about all that comparing stuff. That would be good. Giving up hating and rejecting, that would be nice. My Mr. Grumpy Bear could finally put his feet up and relax. Giving up envying, that would be a real relief. It's horrible. And giving up ignoring aspects of how things are. So if we give up all those, then we will find that we've given up selfing. Yeah? We will find that we've realized not self. So that seems pretty good to me. So in a way, you could think of giving up selfing as a bit like, more like sort of giving up smoking. You know what I mean? It's like, Dharmika was mentioning, sort of referring back to I, like 100 times or more a day. It's okay, you have a 100 times a day sort of selfing habit. So, okay, you cut down and, but it's like, well, with cigarettes, if you're really kind of attached to them, you can't quite imagine, life without your cigarettes. It feels like, it would be bad and, you'd have really lost something. But you cut down, and then you even have little breaks where you kind of manage to stop, but then you start up again, but eventually you do stop, and you feel, well, gosh, sometime down the track, you feel a whole load better. Yeah. I smoked from when I was 12 till I was 22, which is the sort of thing people did in those ancient days. and the prospect of giving up was not appealing because, it had a big sort of place in my life, but actually without it, I felt far healthier and better. So in the same way, we have this kind of way of functioning, which we call selfing, which we feel like we really need to hang on to. And we feel like, if I wasn't selfing, then, what would life be like? But then we do give it up and we find that life is a whole lot freer and bigger. Yeah. Always there's something in us, always there's sort of Mara, which is trying to just keep us in the status quo, whatever it is, yeah, to keep us sort of limited, yeah, to keep us in our familiar small world. But, we don't, as Dharma practitioners, you know, we want to find the openness to going forth, yeah, out into a bigger world. But there are always, whenever we start to step into a bigger world and into more freedom, there are always these little voices going, oh, you don't want to go out there, young mistress, you know, something terrible is happening out there. You know, just stay nice and safe in this little hovel. I don't know what hovel is in German. It's a Häuschen, sehr arm. Always keep a hold of nurse for fear of finding something worse. You know, so just staying in the safe and the secure and the known. And so we tell ourselves all these terrible, catastrophic stories about what will happen if we step out into something bigger. And one of those is, you know, that we do it by going on to ourselves about non-self equals non-existence and, you know, emptiness means nothing, complete nothingness and so on. But we never experience anything like that. We never experience nothingness. We always have experience. It's just a question of the quality of our experience. Is our experience going to be really limited and kind of closed down and contracted? Or is it going to be open and free and liberated? And for me, the killer argument with all this is when I do turn in the direction of spiritual rebirth. As soon as I start looking at those people who've done it, those people who I'm sure have experienced emptiness of inherent existence or non-self, whatever you want to call it, then I see, wow, you know, there were times during long retreat where I'd sort of bump into the next sort of step in my practice and think, oh, don't like the look of that one very much. But then I'd think about Bante, or I'd look at Tillman, who was coming to guide us, and I'd think, well, they've obviously taken that step. And they're far freer, happier, more loving, more aware, more peaceful, more relaxed, more just at ease with themselves and with life than I am. So, all right, here I go. I'll do it. So, yeah, contemplating spiritual rebirth really helps us with spiritual death. And when we really look at what we know about people who are further down the path, then that whole nihilist thing just looks ridiculous. Yeah, okay, I'll give a couple of examples of that. You'll know that, it's the policy here at Adhisthana that at the end of a retreat there's an exam just to test how much you took in. So, it'll be the usual 20 questions. And then I'll give you a couple of them, though, just, you know, so you can be thinking about them between now and the end. They're multiple choice.
Negative marking.
Yes. And the results will be published in Shabda as usual. So, yeah, there are only two answers to choose from, though, for each of these two questions. So it's not too, you know, with a bit of guessing, you might just get through anyway. So, question 17, I see, is about Shakyamuni. And it's about his experience after gaining enlightenment, sitting under the Bodhi tree by the banks of the river Naranjara, having just realised the truth of things, including no self and the lack of inherent existence in all phenomena. At that point, did he, A, think to himself, bugger. Shucks. I've gained enlightenment, and now I don't exist. Why did I do it? What should I do now? I could go to Sarnath and meet those old friends, those five ascetics, and teach them this, but actually I was better off being an ascetic. Because although I was starving to death, at least I had a self then. Perhaps I'll just throw myself in the Naranjara. Or B, did he sit with that realization, blissful, for about 7 weeks under different trees around that area, and then get up and, preserving his precious human body for a further 45 years, go all over India and be immensely compassionate, immensely caring, and start a spiritual tradition with such energy that it's carried on for 2,500 years. So those, it's A or B, okay? Question 19 is about Sangharakshita. At the age of 16, Sangharakshita read the Dharma Sutra and recognized in that teaching, of which it's completely full, about emptiness of inherent existence of all things. At that point, did he think, A, oh dear, nothing exists, I think I'll just stay in Tooting, I'll get myself an attic flat, I'll paint it black, and I'll spend my life writing depressive poetry. Or B, did he gain out of that tremendous energy and inspiration and care so that he spent years spreading the Dharma, and in India he could even just sleep in the fields on his teaching tours, and then he'd go to a village and walk so fast to the place where he was giving the lecture that no one could keep up with him, and he'd give the Dharma with tireless energy, and then he came back to the West, and then he created a worldwide Buddhist movement, which is the reason why we're all sitting here today. Difficult, isn't it? So no conferring, right? So yeah, okay. So when... I'm not going to ask if anyone answered today. There's always some contrarian order member out there. So when we contemplate, it's really vital that we contemplate spiritual death together with spiritual rebirth, because then the whole thing goes into the right context, and we see that, in terms of emptiness, yes, there's no inherent existence, but things continue to appear. It's like when we go to a nihilist extreme, we're denying far too much. We lose the middle way. And we have to keep working with that emotionally in ourselves, but we can be darn clear that that can't be how things are, and that's not what no self and the emptiness of inherent existence are talking about. And if we have that tendency, then it's just really good to keep turning towards the spiritual rebirth aspect of things. Keep focusing on that. And it's almost as if we do that deeply enough, then the selfing tendency will stop of itself. We'll be so in love with enlightenment, that we'll be irresistibly drawn towards it. Yeah, so out of the space where selfing used to happen, appear all the qualities of enlightenment. Out of that deep relaxation that Bhante talks about in the Rinchenpo's repentance seminar, yeah, that deep, what do you call it, physical come psycho-spiritual relaxation, I think he calls it. Out of that, qualities naturally arise. And in fact, if you think about it, if you really think about it, all the best things that you've done, I put it to you, Milad, all the best things that you've done in your life, all your really best moments, were moments where you weren't selfing, were moments where you weren't thinking about me in a sort of limited way. If I look at those moments in my life, you know, they're on different levels. It's like there are kind of sort of physical moments, you know, like I still have a sense in my body of one or two goals I scored, you know, in the school playground, or I still remember a squash shot that I played when I was about 30. And it's like, it was looking at it, I couldn't quite believe that I'd done it. Because I didn't do it. I didn't have time to think about it. It just perfectly happened. And then, say, with the best bits of writing I've done, it didn't feel like I kind of wrote that bit of Meeting the Buddhas. It felt like the muses wrote it, or the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas wrote it. But I didn't write that. It wasn't on the level where I was functioning in terms of, oh, you know, what should I say and how do I say it? It just, something else just seemed to kind of flow out. And similarly with generosity. Yeah, there have been times where I've thought, oh, I don't know if I should give that person that. I know I should, but I don't really know if I want to, really. And I finally have, and that's been very good. But the almost like a deeper generosity has been times where there's been somebody there in front of me and they've needed something. And I've just responded, you know, almost before I've thought of it. In fact, afterwards, a little bit of selfing often comes in and thinks, oh, you know, did you really mean to give them that? But what about me? You know. But in that moment, it's like there was no self-reference going on. Yeah. So in a way, all we're talking about is living at that level. It's living out those finer moments. Yeah, you get the picture. Good, 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 good. Okay, well, maybe that's enough for now. If we can just really get that sense, that message that none of this is about nihilism. All of this is about a far richer, a far more fulfilling way of living. That's what it's talking about. Okay, let's do some practice then.